This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. The National March for Life is set for January 24th in Washington, and the Maryland March for Life follows 2 months later on March 27th. Later in today's show, we'll listen to the keynote address presented by Gloria Purvis at the 2023 Maryland March for Life. But first, in this segment, we're talking with Jenny Bradley Lichter, the incoming president of the National March for Life. Jenny, who takes office in February, will be among those speaking at this year's march. She previously served as Deputy General Counsel at the Catholic University of America in Washington, and during the first Trump administration, she was Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy Director of the White House Domestic Policy Council. Jenny joins us now to talk about the pro-life movement and the upcoming march. Jenny, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invitation.
So the pro-life movement has seen a lot of historic shifts in recent years, especially in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling on Dobbs that overturned Roe v. Wade. Some states have enacted tighter restrictions on abortion, as you know, and then others have liberalized their laws. What do you see as the primary area of focus for the pro-life movement in the wake of all those changes?
It's a great question because, you know, the reality of this beautiful country that we live in is that the states are different and the policy and legal landscape looks different kind of state by state, as you said. So the primary focus is and will always be protecting the unborn. But that is going to look a little bit different, right, in California versus a place like Texas. So I think right now the movement is being called to just really lean into strategically thinking about the particular landscape in any given state and what's possible in terms of protecting the unborn. And at the same time, the sort of dual priority, if you will, I think, is thinking hard about how we can protect and support vulnerable moms. So what other sorts of resourcing can we open up, whether for families directly or for pregnancy resource centers who serve vulnerable moms would be another way to get at that same goal.
We're seeing a lot of support for those pregnancy centers. I know right here in Baltimore, we have several of them. There's one right downtown that shares a wall with Planned Parenthood.
On
one side, you have Planned Parenthood on the
That's
other.
That's exactly where they should be, right?
Yeah, right?
That's fantastic.
Are you seeing more of that around the country? Is there a move to create more of those kinds of resource centers for pregnant women and their families?
Yes, I think so. Yes, that's exactly right. And this is in some ways the untold story of the pro-life movement, right? That there are hundreds and hundreds of pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes around the country. But sometimes they are, I think, a little bit under the radar. So the more that pro-life people or the church or the pro-life movement can raise our voices and raise the profile of organizations like that so that people know that the pro-life movement cares about women, but also, of course, so that women who need to be able to find those resources can find their way to them, I think is a really important priority for the pro-life movement too.
The country seems so polarized these days, especially on the issue of life and abortion. And it's just polarized in general. Are there any areas where the two sides can agree? Like, are there some common things that people can agree on when it comes to supporting pregnant women and their families?
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I hope that from a legal and policy perspective, we'll be seeing more and more of this in the next few years of finding common ground in the shared goal of supporting families. And there is even some common ground, I think, on the really hard issues about abortion. So, for example, large majorities of Americans want to see abortion survivor babies treated, right? There's wide agreement around the question of should a baby who survives an abortion attempt receive medical care? Yes, say Americans across the political spectrum, right? Regardless of their ideological views. So I think and I hope that we'll see some political and legal focus sort of shifting to those issues where there is a lot of agreement, and then we can build on that.
When you were at Catholic University, you were involved in the Guadalupe Project. Could you tell us mm-hmm. about that? How did that work? And what are some of the things you learned from that project?
Thanks, George. Yes, I'd love to talk about the Guadalupe Project. So this is a project that we launched at Catholic University on the day of the Dobbs decision in late June of 2022. It's really the university's answer to the question of what are we called to do in this post-Dobbs moment? And I think a lot of pro-life people, pro-life institutions, church entities were asking ourselves that, right? In the wake of Dobbs, how are we called to meet the moment and serve moms and their babies in the post-Dobbs, the post-Roe era in our country? And at the university, university leadership felt strongly that, of course, we're not a maternity home and we're not going to open one and we're not a lobbying organization primarily, but we are a place where thousands of people make their home. In some cases, quite literally, undergrads who live on campus, for example, but for many thousands of other people, it's the professional home and the kind of like main the primary community for the staff and the faculty who work at the university. So we just sort of set out to make Catholic University the best possible place to be raising a family, whether you're an unmarried undergraduate who wasn't expecting a pregnancy, or you're a young faculty member on the tenure track, newlywed and excited to grow your family. So we did all sorts of things under the banner of the Guadalupe Project, including expanding paid parental leave for staff and for faculty. We made diapers and wipes available free of charge on campus through our campus food pantry. We put some maternity parking spots around campus to make moving around our big college campus easier for pregnant women, especially in the later days of pregnancy. We ran a maternity clothing drive, again, for anyone who needed help affording maternity clothes, who's part of our campus community. And just a number of things like that. Again, we were looking for really sort of concrete actions to support women throughout their pregnancy and as they start raising their children. And I led that project in addition to my legal work at the university. I continued to lead that project for about 2 years until I left the university just a few months ago, and it's still going strong at CUA.
Did you have a lot of people taking advantage of those resources?
Yes, we did. We absolutely did. And a lot of people giving feedback, even something as seemingly small as the maternity parking spaces. I got a number of emails from moms saying, this made such a difference just in how I was able to navigate my day, right? So that was very satisfying and very encouraging to hear. And we got great feedback, even from people who weren't in a season of life where they were directly taking advantage of what the Guadalupe Project was offering, but just feedback from people saying, thank you for showing what it means to be authentically pro-life, right? That we really care for babies and their moms in concrete ways that are really oriented towards hearing the needs that people are experiencing and trying to figure out how we can move resources and attention to meeting those needs. So it was a great learning experience for me and how to do that kind of very concrete and responsive work of supporting moms. And I hope that many other institutions and Catholic institutions especially might follow CUA's example.
Sometimes it seems like the pro-life movement can be really fractious. But this seems like just a common sense thing that people can do, no matter you might disagree on certain policy on how to approach things
Exactly.
or what to prioritize, but everybody could come together with something like that, it seems like.
Right. That's exactly right. Yep. That was our experience at CUA.
You have a new administration coming in. The Trump administration is coming to power pretty soon. How is that going to be different? Where do you see that you might be able to work on pro-life legislation or policy with the new administration that you might not have been able to under the previous one?
Well, I'm a Trump administration alum, and I had the great privilege of working on some of the terrific pro-life wins that came out of the first Trump administration. So I am really excited to work with the Trump administration this time around as well. This is a president, who is experienced now. He and his team know how to use the tools available to the executive branch to put wins on the board. And in the first term, they did. We did put a lot of wins on the board for life. And I fully anticipate seeing a great pro-life agenda unfold in this administration as well. And the March for Life fully intends to continue to advise and make suggestions and recommendations and partner in their work to the extent that we can.
What are some of the areas for a priority in legislation or policy?
I think we'll see the administration come in and roll back a lot of the sort of aggressive pro-abortion agenda of the Biden administration. And that's things like abortion benefits for veterans through the VA, That's the Department of Defense giving an abortion travel allowance, essentially, to soldiers and sailors and airmen, airwomen, so that they can travel to other states if necessary to get abortions. I think the Trump team will come in and take down all of those things. I think we'll probably see some action to beef up federal conscience protections for medical providers who don't want to be forced to be involved in providing abortions. I think we'll see some action on that. I think we'll see some action on making sure that US taxpayer dollars aren't being used to promote or provide abortions either at home or, importantly, abroad, which is another area where the previous administration just sent all kinds of taxpayer dollars overseas to support the pro-abortion agenda. I think we'll see that getting pulled back too. And the March for Life is fully supportive of all of those policy priorities.
Now, Trump has also pledged to expand access to IVF, or will you be working to try to dissuade him of that, or put restrictions or limitations on that?
I hope that what we'll see, at least I hope that we'll be able to now sort of have a conversation as a nation and here in Washington, D.C., as a set of policymakers and policy advocates about the ways in which that IVF doesn't serve families well, both by the creation of so many excess embryos and then the just lack of regulation around the IVF industry that has a lot of negative impacts, even for families who have sought it out. So I hope that that's something that might come out of this interest in the Trump administration of taking a look at an IVF agenda.
We have about a minute left. I'm sure you've heard this before that people say, well, since Dobbs, we don't need a March for Life anymore. What would you say to them? And then also in general, what are you looking forward to this year in the March for
Thank
Life?
you. Well, I would invite everyone to come and march with us on January 24th. And then I think once you're at the March for Life, it's very obvious that, of course, we still need the March for Life. And there's at least a couple of reasons for that. One, our work isn't done. You know, there are still babies who are being killed in this country. There are still moms who need more support during their pregnancy. So we still have work to do, and we'll keep marching until abortion is unthinkable. Not just illegal, but unthinkable. But also the March for Life, in my own personal experience as someone who's been marching since I was a teenager, it's such an encouraging and affirming day for people in the pro-life movement. And every year, tens of thousands of pro-life people come to Washington to get together. It's a really joyful day. There's tons of young people. And I think that it's just an important experience for the movement. Then everyone kind of goes back to your own personal vineyard, if you will, your hometown, your high school, your college, just refreshed and renewed and feeling a new sense of energy and a new sense of optimism from being together in Washington on that day. So hope everyone comes on down to join us, and we intend to continue marching with all of our fellow pro-lifers for many years to come.
And once again, the march is on January 24th in Washington. And our guest today has been Jenny Bradley Lichter. She's the incoming president of the National March for Life. Jenny, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Thanks for the invitation and thanks for the great questions. It's nice to talk with you.
We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to broadcast the powerful keynote address delivered by Gloria Purvis at the Maryland March for Life 2 years ago. I'm George Matisek. You're listening to Catholic Review Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
With inviting surroundings, complete independence, and an unmatched quality of life, Mercy Ridge is the unparalleled choice for your retirement lifestyle. It's a way of living that promotes an active, healthier life. Located in Timonium, Maryland, Mercy Ridge Continuing Care Retirement Community features a beautifully landscaped 32-acre campus. The grounds, dining, and recreational amenities and residences are designed to provide a gracious lifestyle and a variety of exciting activities. Visit mercyridge.com.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. We've been talking about respect life issues on today's show, and with the Maryland March for Life coming up March 27th, we thought we'd do something a little different in this segment by playing the powerful keynote address delivered at the 2023 Maryland March for Life by Gloria Purvis, a nationally known author, speaker, and Catholic pro-life activist. Here's Gloria's address.
First of all, I was so encouraged to see the turnout. This is what Maryland needs. They need to understand that there are more of us for life than not. Yeah. This is our team. And marching and not being quiet. We have to speak for those who cannot. That includes the child in the womb. That includes the person at the end of their life. That includes the person in difficult circumstances right now that are not heard. We are are their voices, and we need to keep raising them. One of the things that I was thinking about is that, you know, they talk about abortion as a human right. I'm like, a human right is never a human wrong. So abortion is not a human right. It is a human wrong. Abortion goes against the very nature of what it is to be a female, and that is to be able to bear a child. A right, properly understood, can never, ever go against the nature of a thing. So do not let people confuse you when they start saying abortion is a human right. I want you to remember, no, it's a human wrong. So abortion is not a human right, it is a
human wrong.
Let's not forget that. One of the things that happened also that I want to draw your attention to, just like Pastor was talking about what he was thinking about when Dobbs overturned Roe v. Wade, I will tell you what I was thinking about. I was thinking about how there were so many news articles, interviews, just this mantra that black women need abortion, that black women need abortion because it is the means to equality, that it is empowerment. And I tell you what, I got tired of seeing the lie making black women into mascots for abortion. Women are going to be disproportionately impacted by abortion, particularly poor black women. And you know what? They're appealing to a good interior that we have, that we don't want anybody to be negatively impacted or harmed. But the truth of the matter is, by saying these lies, it tends to make people think, okay, this is what they need. And it's not just us that gets beguiled by this spell. It's black women too. That we start to say, well, this is what this means to be equal. And you know what else they use to make us think that it's for us? They say, well, white women can have access to abortion. They say rich white women can leave the state and go get an abortion wherever they want. And so therefore, we need to fund abortions for these black women so that they can be equal to these wealthy white women. And I say no. I say, if you want to make us equal to these wealthy white women, why don't you look at the things that they have that we don't? Access to clean water, access to good schools, access for our husbands to have good jobs, for us to have good jobs, us to live in communities that actually have grocery stores. We don't want to live in a food desert. So if you really want to talk about equality, let's look at things that people need. The answer to equality is not to remove the preborn child from the difficult situation, it's to remove the difficult situation. You see, because in an abortion, the only thing that's removed from the difficult situation is the preborn child. The woman is still poor. She's still living in substandard housing. She's still maybe even in a situation of domestic violence. Abortion does not solve any of that.
No, it doesn't.
And the more you start to recognize and challenge people and say, well, what is the problem? If the problem is poverty, the answer is not to kill the poor. Killing the poor does not solve poverty. We need to remember that. We need to think about the things that they are shoving down our throats to try to get us to buy into this violent act that destroys the mother, destroys the child, and frankly also destroys the father. We need to talk about that too. Abortion encourages men to be defilers of women instead of defenders. Okay? You want to talk about rape culture and violence? Let's look at abortion. Okay? And for Maryland to want to enshrine this kind of violence against women and preborn children, and frankly, men, is unconscionable, and we won't stand for it. We will not stand for it. We want a Maryland that values life. We want a Maryland that's pro-life for the whole life, from the moment of conception until the natural death. And I'll tell you something else that gets on my nerves. There's so many times people will say, oh, how come it's all those states that, you know, outlaw abortion still have no help for women? And I say, well, how come it's those states that have help for women still have high abortion rates? Why? And I'll tell you why. It's because we have been deceived into equating abortion with liberation and empowerment, and it is not.
It is not.
Empowerment and liberation cannot be built on the dead bodies of our preborn children. That is not empowerment. Look, I understand fear. I understand difficulty. But the answer is for us to walk with our neighbors. The answer for us is to actually care what is happening to everybody else in our community. We cannot stand silently by and say, well, you know, that's on you, for you to do that. And then say things like, you know what, I believe in a woman's right to choose. And I say, I believe in a woman's right to be born. We have to challenge the prevailing narrative that deceives us and also, quite frankly, tempts us to see freedom in the wrong way. The way they describe freedom is not freedom, it's licentiousness. We have to remember freedom is the ability to do what is good, to do what is right. And we know that abortion, we know that euthanasia, we know that any forms of unjust violence against a human person are not right, they're wrong. And so we need to speak up, we need to challenge, we also need to invite. We need to invite people to the beauty of living according to the values that we hold to be true. Yeah. Yep. They need to see our personal witness by how we speak to our neighbors, how we help our neighbors in need, and how we treat the least among us. And look, I'm not up here to say that's easy. Okay, it's not easy. It is simply not easy. But guess what? We have the ability to have that kind of self-mastery to rebuild Maryland, to make Maryland a place of life, love, laughter, family, the whole thing. But we have to make that choice ourselves. What we ask everyone else to do, we are going to do ourselves. And I want to say to all you men out there, self-mastery matters also. We don't get pregnant by ourselves. So we need you. We need you as virtuous husbands and fathers. We need you as helpers, as protectors, as defenders. So every time they say, oh, you don't have a womb, you have nothing to say, well, guess what? That womb can't get pregnant without you. So you do have something to say. You are fathers. You are future fathers. What Maryland do you want for your children and your future wife and your wives and daughters? So men, I need you to step up. I need you to say, you know what? I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to be with you. It's going to be okay. And it is not just for the woman alone to decide in fear. You make that decision. No, we want to hear you say, I'm here with you. I will support you. I will help you. Men, use your power to help protect, to help defend, to help cherish. These are the things we need from you. And I want to close because I don't want to talk too long because I know we've been out here for a while. I need to give you my personal testimony because there was a time in my life where I was pregnant and I went to my doctor and I thought she was going to say, congratulations, this is wonderful. Instead, she said, you know, let's talk termination. And I was shocked. Because let me tell you something, that's when I found out that I'm the demographic that they're targeting for abortion. So I was shocked to be in my doctor's office being told, let's talk termination. Look, she knew I was married. She knew I wanted a child. She knew I had a good job. She knew I had insurance. But what she didn't know is that I had Jesus. She didn't know that. She started to try to make me afraid that, you know, you're older and, you know, the chance of you having a deformed child and blah, 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 blah. All these things to try to make me afraid. And I was so fed up that I said, you know what? I don't care if I give birth to an eyeball with a piece of hair. One day I'll put a blue ribbon on it, it's going to be my boy. The next day I'll put a pink ribbon on it, it's going to be my girl. I'm having this baby. And she looked at me, I could tell she was like, zealot. But here's what she did that was really something else. You know, we talk so much about women's choice, respect women's choices and empowerment. But what she said to me, she said, how's your husband going to feel about having a severely deformed child? Well, my husband wasn't in the room. So men, go to those appointments with the woman that is carrying your child, okay? Because you are being talked about even if you think you won't be. So she was trying to use fear to say, you are really going to disappoint your husband. You're going to, you know, just tear apart your marriage if you give birth to this child with these disabilities. And I said to her, lady, you do not want me to call my husband in here and tell him to kill his firstborn. And she was shocked. And you know what? Even after that, it was like running the gauntlet to get to delivery. when I went to have my ultrasounds, it was always about termination. And I was like, I don't want to terminate. But we don't see it. So that's the thing. It's not just at the doctor's office. It's all the way till you get to delivery. So do not accompany a woman. You got to walk with her the whole way. And even after, we need to be there and be in friendship and solidarity with these women who have chosen life and oftentimes in difficult circumstances. And that's another thing. Let us not get down on these women who are single, who are poor, who have chosen life. They are the ones heeding the pro-life message. Okay? They are the ones heeding the pro-life message because they are choosing life even in a difficult circumstance.
They are heroes.
They are heroes, yes. And I also want to say one other thing to you, and maybe I do it better by showing. I want you to see what this doctor tried to deprive me of. Lourdes, come here.
All right.
This is the baby that my doctor wanted aborted. She's healthy, she's beautiful, and she's a child of God. And Maryland, this is why we march. Don't ever forget. We need to choose life. We need to choose love. We need to choose families. And Maryland, we can do this. So no matter how difficult.
We love you, Lourdes.
No matter how difficult, we all have that choice interiorly to make that will be a witness to everybody else. So I'm here to tell you I chose an establishment that was trying to make me fearful.
We love you, Gloria.
I chose in a place where I didn't have a lot of support. And she's the fruit of it. She's the future of Maryland.
You've been listening to Gloria Purvis speaking at the Maryland March for Life 2 years ago. For more information on this year's March for Life, set for March 27th in Annapolis, visit mdmarchforlife.com. Again, that's mdmarchforlife.com. For Catholic Review Radio, I'm George Matisek. Thanks for listening.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week. Available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area, and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.